biggest thing that stands out to me about Jacksonville is their offensive discipline and versatility. Their overall team athleticism is exceptional. They're definitely going to be a good first challenge for us. I know to open the season last year, they went up and beat Minnesota at Minnesota. So I don't think it'll be difficult to get our players' attention.
And that's the head coach of the KU Jayhawk women's basketball team, Brandon Schneider. They had a great year last year, 21-10 overall, 11-7, and went to the second round of the NCAA tournament. And there are some pretty high expectations for KU women's basketball, picked to be fifth in the Big 12 this year, actually ahead of K-State, who's picked sixth. Of course, if Aoka Lee was healthy, K-State would be picked higher than KU. So K-State off to a nice start. KU looking to start their season off with a bang tonight against the Dolphins of Jacksonville. Nothing sounds more intimidating than Dolphins. I mean, Jason is like Flipper. Petrified right
Flipper.
Now.
Flipper scares the heck out of me.
Flipper scares you?
Yes.
Yeah, Flipper. Flipper's kind of creepy. You know, that's what scares me. Put a mask on Flipper and, well, looks like Flipper. Yeah. Jacksonville Dolphins. So, KU women in action tonight. Local sports, Dusty.
Yes, we do have high school football coming up on Friday night, so stay tuned for that. You can find the full brackets for the high school football playoffs at ncksports.com. As Friday night on Katy Country 94 and online video on the Bullitt Trojan channel, we have Bullitt hosting Kingman in the 2A quarterfinals. We'll have pregame coverage at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock, and then on Z96.3 through the lake and katycountry94.com, audio online. You can listen to the Osborne Bulldogs taking on the Axtell Eagles. Axtell, the number one team in the state there in 8-man Division 2. Quarterfinal matchup there at Liberty Field in Osborne. We'll have pregame at 5:30 for that one and kickoff at 6 o'clock. Also coming up on Friday night, Thunder Ridge will be at Victoria in the 8-man Division 2 playoffs, and Smith Center's on the road at Inman in the Class 1A quarterfinals. Let's look at what's going on here in high school football. Believe it or not, we're starting to think about some winter sports here as the Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association has released their preseason rankings, and we'll have these posted later this morning at ncksports.com. But we can tell you for now anyway that the team rankings, Hoxie comes in at number one to start the year in 3-2-1A. Smith Center is number four as a team. And three Smith Center wrestlers are ranked within the top six in their respective classes, weight classes at 138. Bentley Montgomery is number two to start the season. Eli Franklin at 215 is number two as well. And 144 pounds, Alex Wilkinson of Smith Center is number three. New weight classes this year for high school wrestling in Kansas. So, again, we'll have all that posted after the show here this morning at ncksports.com, the Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association rankings for the preseason for 2022-23 season.
Have athlete of the week tomorrow?
Yes.
All right. Sounds good. Look forward to all of that, and look forward to the high school football. A couple big games, obviously, coming up on Friday for Beloit and Osborne. And then, of course, Thunder Ridge at Smith Center still alive and competing for a state championship. So best of luck to all of those football teams as they compete. I noticed when you mentioned the wrestling rankings, of course, I knew this before you mentioned it because I saw it earlier, but I don't see a single Beloit Trojan wrestler ranked. I don't know when last time that happened.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah,
long. I don't think I've ever seen it since I've been here. They've always been so good, and they usually have at least a couple wrestlers ranked. And I noticed there wasn't a Beloit wrestler ranked.
Yeah.
Of course, Brendan Walker had a great career and ended that in style last year. But Smith Center almost always has somebody, and they do this year. But not as many Smith Center wrestlers as there used to be, and definitely not as many Beloit ones. And that. In those rankings.
Yeah,
that can change.
And there's a lot of things that go into that. And there's obviously a lot more wrestling programs that have gotten better out east and made it a lot of more of a competition over the last 5 to 10 years here as far as where they kind of disperse who the best wrestlers are. And they've done a lot of work in that area to get better in that part of the state.
So we'll have those posted later today. The college football playoff rankings came out last night. I do not glue my eyes on television when these come out. They come out later. It's fine.
I don't ever watch it, to be honest.
Twitter will have them later.
I'm going to say I know what they are today. I know what they are last night. It's not that big a deal to me. And we talked about the other day, the top four are the four we would have. So where's the controversy? I mean, people got to make up controversy. And this will change. Georgia's one, as they should be. Ohio State is two, as they should be. Michigan is three, in my opinion, as they should be. Mm-hmm. Four is TCU, as they should be. Tennessee's five, as they should be. Six is Oregon, as they should be. Seven is LSU. Okay, now we start to talk a little bit. 8 Southern Cal, who hasn't really beaten anybody in the one really tough game they lost, and their defense is horrible. Alabama's 9, don't get me started. Clemson is 10. Although I will say Alabama at 9, I mean, I'm kind of surprised they're that low. I'm cool with it. Clemson, with one less loss than Alabama, of course, is behind Alabama at 10. They're 8-1. But Clemson has a – here's probably the first contention. Clemson wasn't all that. They were proved that last week. But their resume is better than Southern Cal's. I mean, they've beaten, like, 4 ranked teams out of the ACC. USC hasn't beaten anybody.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to Oregon and Tennessee, they both got slapped across the face by Georgia. Oregon has won 8 in a row since then. So people, of course, what's the one you remember? Tennessee, and Tennessee still ranked ahead of Oregon, which I would tend to agree with that because Tennessee didn't get beat as bad as Oregon did. LSU at 7. I just told you USC's not that great. Their resume isn't that good. They got to be ahead of Alabama. They just beat them. I guess you could maybe try to make a case for Clemson to be ahead of LSU because Clemson has one loss. LSU has 2. Ole Miss has one loss, and they're 11. LSU is 7. It does set up the possibility for LSU to get in as the first team to have 2 losses, make the college football playoff, and I think that will happen. I think they're going to be a team that's going to have 2 losses at some point here. It might not be this year, but I think it's going to happen in the near future. So Georgia's still going to have to play the SEC title game. I'll have to look at their schedule. Ohio State has to play Michigan. Although, if you lose that game, that means you're probably not going to the Big Ten title game. So are you going to put a non-division winner in the college football playoff? Because that's a question with always has been about Alabama or LSU. If they don't, you know, like what happens if LSU runs the table? Which they got a favorable schedule the rest of the way. And they win the SEC title game against Georgia. LSU's probably in the playoff, Georgia's probably in, unless they get blown out, they're probably in. So you got 2 SEC schools, then you probably got the winner of Ohio State, Michigan, and then, you know, I don't think TCU is going to run the table, and they have to, I think, probably, or they gotta go 12-1 and win the Big 12 championship, at least. And I don't think any of us think TCU is going to be there at the end of the year in the playoff, but they do control their own path. And so they can definitely be there if they win out. Tennessee's another interesting one. You know, what if they win out? Okay, they don't win their division. Well, then they're not in the SEC title game. So, do they get in? Yeah. You know, I mean, they'd have one loss. LSU'd have 2. But if LSU runs the table and wins the, then you'd come down to Tennessee and Georgia. Well, Georgia's going to be over Tennessee if Georgia's in the SEC title game. Tennessee lost to Georgia. And that really blocks Alabama from getting in at all. Alabama's biggest problem is not that they can't move up. Their biggest problem is their own conference.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of the rankings? Any contentions? Any issues there?
I just can't. I can't get worked up about it right now. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm not asking you to get worked up. Just is there something that stands out to you and you go, well, you know, I think that could be a little bit different.
I want to say Clemson, but they got beat bad. Like,
they did.
It was not good.
That's
true. And so I don't really have any major issues with where everything sits right now.
But Oregon got smoked, and they're well ahead of Clemson.
Yeah.
Just thrown out there.
And I think that the Oregon thing is just like everything else, right? It's been a long time since they lost. And I think you should get credit for that at this point of the rankings. You know, who knows what you had there that first week, and then you won 8 in a row or whatever, you know. And I like giving them a little bit more benefit of the doubt since it was so early that they lost, right? Clemson just lost by 21 points.
Right.
And so I think that goes into the factor for me, and it always does for me when I'm doing my own high school rankings too, right? It's just something that's in your mind when you're doing it. So, you know, I think they have it right all the way through maybe Alabama and LSU, yeah. Like the SEC schools are always going to get their preferential treatment. That's just the way it is. But, you know, you could argue that those teams probably should be pushed down a little bit more, maybe 9 and 10, and then the other teams that are, you know, 8 and whatever, 10 ahead of them, right? Clemson ahead of both of those. You could argue that.
SEC is 5 of the top 11.
Yeah.
So when you look at SEC schedule, LSU's got to go to Arkansas. That'd be a perfect trap game for LSU. Alabama's at Ole Miss. Listen, whoever loses that's out for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ole Miss ain't gonna get in with two losses. Alabama sure as heck better not with three. So that's an elimination game right there. And what's the odds of Alabama losing two in a row?
Not great.
Lane Kiffin against Nick Saban, by the way, in that one. And then week 12, Georgia's got to go to Kentucky. I mean, you never know. And then everybody else plays, you know, the easy games. They're non-con. Alabama against Austin Peay. I just love that in week 12. Sensational stuff there. Week 13, there is no matchup between two ranked teams. Auburn goes Alabama. By then, Alabama might be out of it if they're not already. So there's really no drama there in week 13. And week 14, there's no game scheduled. So
that'll be the conference championship.
Yeah, it'll be a conference championship game. So I'm going to pull up here the standings for the SEC. So Georgia's going to win the East. And then it comes down to whether LSU trips up, and they have very winnable games the rest of the way. And if Alabama beats Ole Miss, LSU actually could lose another game and possibly be in, believe it or not, out of the SEC West. So you're looking at LSU and Georgia in the SEC title game. LSU with two losses, Georgia probably undefeated. And the winner of that is probably in. If LSU has two, they're probably in.
Yeah,
and then
and
Georgia's in
if they lose.
So then Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, three. The winner of that is probably going to win the Big Ten title game, right? I think most people agree with that.
Yes.
Because the other division's horrible, as we pointed out. So what's left to really decide here? Everybody's talking about this drama. What's really – it's kind of boring, actually. The only big drama is who's going to get the four spot.
Yeah, and TCU and they the should.
They, TCU
right.
runs the table. They will.
But, it, you know, if – TCU loses, as we all kind of expect them to do somewhere along the way, then you could argue the loser of Ohio State, Michigan. You could argue Tennessee. You could probably, if Oregon wins the Pac-12 conference.
See, to me, Oregon is the fourth team. If they win out, win the Pac-12, they take the place of TCU because he'd be a conference champion.
Yeah,
but I don't think they're going to run.
What's going to be interesting about that is if they don't, and if TCU doesn't, then you could have two conferences represented in the four teams that are in the playoff. Mm-hmm. It's very feasible to say
listen,
that
you could have three
loses,
SEC teams in there out of four.
Yeah.
You could have Tennessee in ahead of, let's say Ohio State beats Michigan. And let's see they beat them a couple touchdowns. Yeah. You could have a Tennessee in the playoff, not winning their division or in the SEC title game. You could have easily three teams in the top four from the SEC.
Yeah. I don't think they would do that. I think that they would have Michigan, unless they get blown out like to smithereens by Ohio State. I think if they were going to pick between Michigan and Tennessee in that situation, that Michigan would get the nod because I don't think that they would put three of the same conference in there, but maybe I'm wrong. But
I think they would. I think they should, to be honest with you. I mean, if you're going to be fair about this, you go off a resume. And okay, if Michigan gets walloped by Ohio State, Tennessee got beat pretty soundly by Georgia, now you're just going to compare the resumes. Mm-hmm. Tennessee versus Michigan, which one do you think is better? And that's going to be the controversy for the final spot. Now, of course, if Ohio State would lose two games between now, let's say something crazy happens, and Ohio State beats Michigan, but then somehow gets upset in the Big Ten title game. I don't see how it's even going to happen, but let's say it did. Now that causes chaos. Obviously, your conference title games. I'll tell you the other chaos is if Oregon, Oregon or Utah, I mean, wins the Pac-12 or USC, but let's say they have two losses. I don't think a Pac-12 champion's getting in with two losses. But the question would be, do you put a conference champion with two losses in over a team like Tennessee or Michigan who didn't even win their division? There's the conundrum, because they say, and it's always they move the goalposts all the time,
yeah,
of course. And that is, shouldn't you value conference championships more? And I think you should, personally. Now, sometimes you're just in the wrong division. Like, Ohio State, Michigan should be in separate divisions so they can meet in the Big Ten.
They're going to argue back that your division losses are to Ohio State, a playoff team.
Tennessee's to Georgia.
And Tennessee's is to Georgia, which is a playoff team. Right. So
Alabama's like, LSU could be a playoff team.
If I'm only losing to the top four teams in the country, you know, shouldn't I be in consideration for possibly like the fourth spot? You know, or if I'm losing to just the top three, how can I not be in consideration for the fourth spot, you know, and that's their argument. And I would understand that argument. I mean, you want the four best. There's no clear way to get there. There's nothing that automatically says Southern California as a Pac-12 champion is any better than anybody else. You know, so it's just – it's an imperfect, perfect way to do it. It causes so much controversy and talking points throughout the way, and they're going to put in who they want to put in anyway, and we're all going to watch because we're not going to get that mad about it. We'll say we're mad about it, but we're not. We'll watch.
Well, looking at the Pac-12, Washington's 25th. They are taking on Oregon this Saturday, so that's not going to be an easy game for Oregon. And then, as my computer slowly goes, there we go. Utah against Oregon and USC against UCLA. There, you're going to take those four ranked in the top 13. So two of them are going to get eliminated. Those are elimination games. Next Saturday is doom day for some teams in the Pac-12 because Oregon, Utah already beat USC. USC, UCLA. I think Oregon beat UCLA. So that's kind of like a round robin in a way. So that will help decide. And then, of course, there could be a rematch in regards to Utah-Oregon. Maybe they could meet again in the Pac-12 title game or USC-UCLA, whatever the case may be. I don't know how it works. I don't have the divisions in front of me, okay? So there's – and that's the 19th. Let's see. Is there anything else after that? That's probably it, I would think, for the Pac-12.
Should be something that next week.
There is, but there's no –
yeah, nothing.
Notre Dame-USC. Notre Dame, you know, USC could be sitting good, but then they lose a non-con game to Notre Dame. That blows them out, smithereens. USC's got a tough schedule the rest of the way, by the way. So let me look at the standings so I can see the divisions here because I – oh, come on now. There we go. Okay, so they don't have divisions. See, I don't follow the Pac-12 that closely. So it's just the top two teams. So you could have Oregon USC or Oregon UCLA, or like I said, you could have USC UCLA somehow in a rematch, or Utah USC, which was a great game earlier in the year that Utah won. So the Pac-12 to me looks like they're going to cannibalize each other. The Big 12 is going to, somebody's going to take out TCU. They got to still play. Doesn't TCU still have to play Baylor? Did they play Baylor?
I think they still have to put.
I think they do, yeah, and they I got. Think they and, had, and, I think they do, and then of course they got Texas this week, which. Everybody thinks Texas is going to win that game, which I think it's funny if they wouldn't. But TCU's got to go to West Virginia. I already did that one. They've got to go to Baylor after playing Texas. So they're on the road at Texas, at Baylor, and then to host Iowa State, which is not an easy game. Iowa State's a lot better than the record indicates. And then the Big 12 title game. Does anybody think they're going to go unscathed?
We obviously don't. We said that earlier this week.
What if they lose one of those games to Baylor? Let's say they lose to Baylor, but they get a rematch against Baylor and win the Big 12 title, and they have one loss. Do you think they should be in the playoff? Because Ohio State, Michigan, one of those will not be in the conference title game, will not win a conference title. Tennessee will not be there. Alabama won't be there. Ole Miss won't be there. So you'd really be going of TCU against the Pac-12 champion, and we just said they'll cannibalize each other. So you're probably going to be arguing TCU versus Clemson if they win the ACC, or you go probably against Tennessee or Michigan if they happen to lose. Michigan,
whoever loses that game, right? Ohio State, Michigan.
Once again, but if you're going to have Michigan, Ohio State, and they have, let's say Michigan has one loss and they lose Ohio State, and TCU has the one loss, but they avenge it. And they get the extra data point and win the conference championship. Who's in, Michigan or TCU? See, this is where the committee is going to be looking like a whole bunch of hypocrites because they're going to probably go brand name. But they say conference championships are really important. They were mentioning the Big 12 really needs that extra data point. The Big 12 believe they need an extra data point. They play a true round robin anyway, and now they're going to have a rematch. And, of course, it cost the Big 12 a playoff berth last year. It's happened before, and I think it's very possible it's going to happen again. I think TCU is going to lose one of these games before they get the Big 12 title game, but if they only lose one, they're still going to be in Arlington. And odds are it's a rematch against either Texas or Baylor. All right, one of those teams they might lose to, and if they avenge it, to me, they should be in the playoff.
Yeah.
It's
also going to depend on what happens with the Pac-12. We say they probably
if Oregon
kind of
runs the table, then Oregon's probably ahead of TCU.
Or you know, Southern Cal, if they would go through unscathed with that extra Notre Dame game on there, that'll look good at the end of the year.
If they have a team that has one loss and wins the Pac-12, Oregon,
I would put USC, over
UCLA,
the Big 12.
They'll be over the Big 12. I think that's pretty positive, especially if it's USC brand name, UCLA, Oregon. There's some brand there, so I think the SEC champ is in no matter what, unless LSU has three losses overall and they win it. So the SEC champ's probably in, even with two losses with LSU. Or Georgia wins it undefeated. Or Georgia loses, but they only have one loss. They're 12-0 going into that. So the two SEC teams, champion and probably runner-up, right? And then the Big Ten champion is going to be Ohio State or Michigan, more likely. So they're in. So now you come down to your fourth spot. And are you going to take the Pac-12 champion or the Big 12 champion? And in this case, I think you're probably taking the Pac-12 champion. But if TCU was Oklahoma or Texas, more than likely the Big 12 mm-hmm. would be in. And we come back to this whole political, you know, garbage in regards to brand name.
TCU
has to go undefeated.
I think so.
And you shouldn't have to. In the Power 5, you shouldn't have to go undefeated to get in. Because another conference has a team with two losses in.
And that's just it. And then once we get these conferences realigned with Oklahoma and Texas moving over and the Big 12 expanding, and when we get these all done, these are going to be some big conferences. Yeah. And it's almost going to be like
you're not going to play everybody.
You're not going to play everybody, but you're going to have a tough game just about every week. Sure. You know, you'll have your Vanderbilt, you'll have your whatever, but Nebraska. I did that to myself. You're going to have those games every once in a while. But you know, it's almost an NFL schedule. There's going to be a time, and it's going to be soon, that a two loss team does get into this playoff, it's just a matter of time.
If LSU wins the SEC and runs the table, they'll be in.
Yeah,
The playoff's going to expand too, and it has to when you talk about all those teams moving to different conferences.
Absolutely right. Okay, the rest of the top 20, if you want that. Ole Miss 11, UCLA 12, Utah 13, Penn State's 14, North Carolina 15, North Carolina State 16, Tulane, who beat K-State, 17, Texas 18, they're the highest-ranked three-loss team, K-State right behind them at 19, Notre Dame at 20, Illinois 21, and go from there. So K-State drops from, 13 to 19 in the playoff rankings. Not that it matters, because K-State's not going to the playoff with three losses, even if they only had one. I don't know if K-State would be in the college playoff picture necessarily because of what we just talked about. All right, quarterback Josh Allen, the Buffalo Bills, dealing with a sprained right elbow, sources say, UCL injury that will limit his week. Not sure if he's going to play against the Vikings, who are 7-1. The belief is it's an injury he can manage moving forward. How he responds this week is key. He had a UCL injury in his elbow back early in his career, did Josh Allen. He missed four games, so he looks like he's going to fight through it. And we'll see how effective he is moving forward for the Bills, who have a tough test against the Vikings this week. The NFL, the first flex scheduling change announced yesterday, the Chiefs will be playing another primetime game. Chiefs were going to play the Chargers in L.A. at 3:25, November 20th, which would be next Sunday. Instead, that game's been moved to Sunday Night Football at 7:20, and the Bengals Steelers will go from primetime to 3:25. Chiefs have already played four night games. They'll have the Chargers be the fifth, and they're scheduled to play the Broncos on a Sunday night, week 14, as a sixth. I think that might get flexed out. I think the Broncos keep struggling. Mm-hmm. Although Mahomes, you know, he's the face of the NFL. The next game on the schedule for the Chiefs, and I like your little note there, Dusty, in a rarity, a noon kickoff. It is a weird noon kickoff. I like the night kickoffs because I can do stuff outside during the day. I got some other things going on with my kids and this and that, so I'm okay with not having noon kickoffs.
I don't like the night kickoff.
Because noon, yeah, I've got things going on. I got basketball going on. I can't watch the game when we play in the afternoon, but when the evening, we're all done, so...
I like the night kickoff as far as watching the game, but then it's after the game where then you got to gather all the info for this part, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I like doing it at noon. It's done. I don't have to worry about it the rest of the day.
So selfish. So selfish.
But the night kickoff is very fun as a fan.
It's awesome to go to a night game, yeah. Arrowhead. If you can ever afford it, go to a night game. I was interested to see what the tickets were right about kickoff time. I looked on StubHub just to see how far they went down. They went down some, no doubt. Yeah. But I was like, man, that's still kind of pricey, yeah. Even right at kickoff. Some people are just like, I'll eat the tickets before I give somebody a good deal. I'm like, well, that's not very smart.
That's wild to me.
Yeah. Take your money, man. Right. You're not going to even see the person.
Somebody back out last minute, $150 per ticket. That's insane. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That's for a K-State game, not a Chiefs game, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Some of my friends went to this last night game, and they
had
a great time.
Night games are awesome, man. We went a few years ago when they played the Bengals, Mahomes' first year as a starter, and Kareem Hunt played, and they killed the Bengals, and we had great seats and a lot cheaper then. And, man, it was a blast, absolute blast. All right, MVP talk. We mentioned this a little bit in the tease on Waterside Wake Up. You know, Jalen Hurts, to me, is the front runner for MVP, and I think deservingly so. I mean, they're undefeated. They haven't lost a game. Hurts is a dual-threat quarterback. He's put up big numbers. So I think Jalen Hurts, to me, is the number one guy. If I had to vote today, I would vote him number one. My number two choice would be Patrick Mahomes. And Patrick Mahomes leads the league in touchdown passes, QBR, passing yardage, and we can go through a whole bunch of stuff he leads the league in without Tyreek Hill. And yet there's not a ton of talk about Patrick Mahomes being MVP. It was all about Josh Allen. Now he's had two bad games, but he's not broken, remember, but Mahomes was last year. Still cracks me up. So Allen's kind of out of the race right now. Usually you look at quarterback as your MVP. Somebody said Micah Parsons had a really good year for the Cowboys, a defensive player. And I'm trying to sit here and say, who's MVP? You know, Lamar Jackson maybe sneaks back in a little bit because the Ravens have started to win some games and finish games. You know, Kirk Cousins isn't being considered at all, and they're the only team in the league with one loss. Right. So is there anybody I'm missing besides Hurts and Mahomes that should be considered MVP for the regular season right now?
I honestly haven't looked into it enough, so I can't argue anybody else other than those two guys.
Maybe use a kind of a
Tyreek Hill could
fringe.
Be definitely.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah. A fringe kind of candidate would be Tyreek Hill.
1,100 yards receiving through nine games. He's on pace for 2,000 yards receiving.
If Tyreek Hill hits that 2,000 mark and puts a couple more touchdowns on the, or a few more touchdowns on there,
I think he gets to 2,000 yards, he's going to put more touchdowns.
Yeah,
there.
Right. He's going to, I think that would be a good candidate there. But yeah, I mean, you could go to a little bit if you're just talking about trying to get a group of guys together for the halfway mark here. I wouldn't mind that at all, but
I don't think Tua missed a couple games. I just don't think I put Tua as a MVP right now at all.
Tyreek's going to get that Cooper Kupp treatment, though.
Yeah.
You know, like he'll get offensive player of the year, but he won't be MVP.
Right.
I, even if he gets 2,000 yards, I still feel like he'll be offensive MVP for sure, but won't get that love for – or offensive player of the year, but won't get that love for MVP.
Right now, Tyreek Hill is on pace for 2,085 yards receiving. Now, he only has three touchdown catches so far. He's been targeted 100 times already. Dear God. 1,100 yards receiving. Three touchdowns right now. That's a season for most. So he's on pace for six touchdowns, 2,085 yards if he stays healthy, and Tua stays healthy, although he still got some good numbers when Bridgewater was out there. So I think you're right, Dusty. I think he'd be offensive player of the year. It'd be
Cooper
insane.
Cup was like 53 yards from 2,000 last year. So Cooper Kupp was 53 from 2,000. Still didn't.
I said he should have been MVP.
We both did.
He was like fifth in the rankings.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, got to give it to a quarterback. So here you go, Aaron Rodgers. Here's your second MVP.
Wouldn't it be something? Mahomes wins the MVP and Tyreek Hill wins Offensive Player of the Year. Mahomes won MVP without the Offensive Player of the Year who left. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I mean, that'd be pretty insane. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that should be considered for MVP besides those few guys. I'm not seeing anything there.
If you're doing it today, there's not a lot of choices. List. But if you kind of think
Geno Smith should at least be mentioned.
Sure.
He should be mentioned.
If you want to go what you think who's going to be there at the end, you could put Josh Allen back there, depending on
if
the
he
health
would go
here.
Hot, yeah. And I think you could put Tua if he stays healthy.
Joe Burrow could sneak in there if the Bengals finish.
There are a lot of picks.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe if he gets hot. I think Lamar would be, to me, it would be Hurts and it would be Mahomes. Those are the top. And then I think you could possibly see if Josh Allen finished strong, if Lamar Jackson finishes, he's trending the right direction. I could see that. Tua, I think, could be there. You can mention, obviously, Tyreek Hill is the MVP candidate. He has 2,000 yards receiving, but like Dusty said, probably offensive player of the year. There's nobody in NFC that I can see at all that would be MVP just except Geno Smith. Yeah. I mean, Kirk Cousins, they're 7-1. I don't know what Cousins' numbers are. I mean, it's Jalen Hurts or bust in the NFC. I mean, the Cowboys, there's nobody that's MVP worthy unless you know, Parsons, the defensive player, is not going to win it. We know that. So you can mention it all you want. So I mean, it's a small group is what I'm trying to establish here. So leads me to the second question, and we've discussed this before, but why isn't Mahomes getting more run for MVP?
Well, I kind of mentioned it in the tease. It's just too easy to say it right now. The Chiefs are good. It's just too easy. So let's try to add as many names to the list as we can right now. If you're a talking head or a sports host or whatever, let's just try to you know my strange MVP pick coming up after the tease or whatever after the break. Stay tuned for that. But I just think that's a reason why it's just a little bit simple right now. We all know Patrick Mahomes, if healthy, the Chiefs are going to be around the top seed, and Patrick Mahomes is going to be around the league leader in a lot of categories. So that's my answer. It's just too easy to say Patrick Mahomes right now, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Dusty?
It's the same thing every year with Patrick Mahomes. Like, the standard's been set of who he is, and it's the same thing with Tom Brady. It's the same thing we saw with Michael Jordan, why he didn't win it every year. He's so good.
LeBron,
exactly. They're so good that somebody wants to talk about somebody else, and you can't just sit here and just be stuck on Patrick Mahomes. It's just not fun, right? It's not... It gets boring after a while, and he set that. That's for me. Is he set the standard that's above everything else? But his standard that he set for himself, he's playing above his standard right now than he set for himself even before. Mm-hmm. As if you look at the numbers and the passing yards and things like that, for what he's able to do, because we talk so much about a lot of years, like he'll get. We don't want him to have 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, right? But he's clearly on pace for 5,000 yards passing right now. Mm-hmm. But it's been in a different way because he doesn't have that target of Tyreek Hill this year, and it's being distributed in such a different way that maybe it doesn't look as sexy. I think that's part of it too. I think he doesn't have, like, Tyreek Hill, that target down the field that everybody's seen so much in the past. That if he doesn't have somebody that looks good to throw the ball to other than Travis Kelce, because that's also getting boring, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's not as sexy to have 3,600 yards already at this point of the season. Mm-hmm. And so I think it all goes into that with Patrick Mahomes. People want to talk about somebody else, and they're tired of Patrick Mahomes already, right? And that standard that he has set is there. But like I said, he's already past that. He's on pace for his best year right now.
Yes, he is.
As far as passing yardage,
he's on pace
or anything like that. But
he's on pace for, if you had a 16-game season, because remember he threw just over 5,000 yards his first year as a starter. He's on pace to beat that. He'd have 5,200. But you add in a 17th game, that means he's on pace for 5,500 yards. 5,500 yards, is that the single season record?
It'd be close.
For yardage, it probably is.
It's,
that would be the record.
Yeah,
because Manning had,
did something.
And that's going to get beat here in the next
year. Yeah, because you got extra game.
Right.
But anyway, 5,500 yards, 8 yards average on, I don't know if that's completions or attempts, but that's a half a yard higher than last year. Right there with his MVP. Well, his MVP year is a yard more, but that's because they stretched the field and teams didn't adjust. Touchdowns, he's on pace for 44. And he's on pace for 11 interceptions. 4-1 ratio is his pace there. And his rating is 103.6. The year he won MVP, his rating was 113.8. 50 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, threw for 5,100 yards. Completion percentage is right on. So he's having as good, if not a better year this year than his MVP year. So here's the thing I've always said about MVP. They need to change it. Because most valuable player should be the most valuable player. And if you take... You need to me, the way you figure out most valuable player is, where would the team be in your belief, in your eyes, if that player was hurt and out for the season? You didn't have them on your team. Where would they end up being? Okay? So when you say, well, Shohei Ohtani should be MVP, well, they already suck. So you take them away, whoop-de-doo. Now you win 62 instead of 74.
We're in last place with you. We can be in last place without you.
And that's the argument against people that get MVP on losing teams. And it's a fair argument. Like, if you really go by the letter of the letters, most valuable player, okay, Aaron Judge should be most valuable player. He should, period. Ohtani does more for any other team because he pitches and he hits, and he plays defense or DHs. And yet his team wasn't that good. So even if he wasn't on the team, they'd be worse, yes. But Aaron Judge is the MVP because they had a much better year. You take Aaron Judge away, the Yankees probably still win 90 games. But
that's,
and then you sit
the
here and you go,
of it.
So now you go, okay, so Ohtani, they go from, say, 74 wins to 64 wins. But the Yankees go from 99 to 89. The Yankees are probably still in the playoffs, maybe. I don't know. I'd have to look at the standings. So really it's closer than you think. Now, with the NFL, you take Aaron Rodgers off the Packers right now, it's not that big a deal. Take him off the
Sad
team.
Sad to say that.
I know. But you take him off the team the last 2 years, it's a huge
gigantic
deal.
We saw it happen, right?
Right, exactly. Right. You take Mahomes off the Chiefs, are they still a serviceable offense maybe for a couple games, like with Matt Moore, who got came off the street because Henny was hurt, or Henny coming in the second half of a playoff game against the Browns and saving the day? Yeah, you could probably get by a little bit, but over the course of the season, if the Chiefs are 13-4 with Mahomes, with Henny, they're probably at best 10-7. So Mahomes is worth at least 3 or 4 wins, maybe more. You know, you take Tom Brady away from the Buccaneers, I hate to say this, but you take Tom Brady away with the Buccaneers, they got Blaine Gabbert as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now, they've only won 4 with Tom Brady, so you could argue once again, okay, with Gabbert, we might win 2.
Yeah.
So, Jalen Hurts, you take him away from the Eagles? Listen, there's nowhere. They're 8-0. They're probably 4-4. So, that you could argue right there. So, to me, when you really think about most valuable player, what do you think they would be without him? You know, even Jordan, the argument that Michael Jordan should be MVP every year, and there's no doubt he could have easily been MVP every year. There are years Karl Malone got it, Charles Barkley got it. It was just like, let's get everybody else a trophy that's close because we just can't give it to the same guy every year. That's boring. But when Michael Jordan stepped away and retired the first time, the Bulls won 50 games without him. Scottie Pippen had an MVP type of season. Mm-hmm. So maybe Jordan wasn't as valuable. I know this is blasphemy, but maybe Jordan wasn't as valuable as people think in regards to the regular season and the course of wins. Now, you don't judge and vote most valuable player based on the postseason. It is based on the regular season. People can't keep that separate. So if you're talking about the regular season, then Michael Jordan wasn't as important in the regular season as some people believed, at least at that time, because Phil Jackson and the Bulls still won 50 games and still went into Game 7 in the second round of the playoffs and, you know, easily could have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And who knows what would happen if they got by the Knicks that year. Now, that's where the value came in for Jordan, clearly. He puts you over the top. But how do you judge the value of the most valuable player? And there's no doubt that all the guys we talked about, you take them off their team, these teams are worse. But what teams are most suited to handle losing one of these key guys? Phil Jackson was able to handle it for 1 year and still have a really, really good team. You know, you lose Kobe, the Lakers went south in a hurry, okay? Shaq left, the Lakers went south in a hurry, and Kobe was with the Lakers.
With the Cavs that first year LeBron went to Miami, it was ridiculous, like 60 to 20 wins or something like that.
I will say, and this is, listen, and Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen hurt this for Jordan. But to me, the most valuable player of any sport that I've seen go from one franchise to another. And granted, Jordan didn't go to a whole bunch of franchises until late in his career. So if Jordan did what LeBron did, we'd probably say the same thing about Jordan. But LeBron jumped around. He went Cleveland. He got to the finals with a horrible roster. He goes to Miami, and yeah, he got some guys to join him. But without LeBron, Miami, you know, they were decent before he got there. They win titles. Then he goes back to Cleveland. Instantly, they're winning. You know, they're a top three seed, and they go right back to NBA finals like three straight years, just like that, okay? And he goes to the Lakers, and the second year, they win a title. To me, the ultimate most valuable player of any sport that I've ever seen in my time, okay, and while I've been alive, and this might hurt me because I am a Jordan guy, but I can be objective to tell you, LeBron has proven that when he leaves a franchise, they go to hell in a handbasket. But when he goes to that franchise, he immediately takes them from 20 wins to 50, just like that. And he did it with a horrible roster, okay? A horrible, horrific roster to get the NBA Finals 1 year, and that's an indictment on Eastern Conference that year, too. But still, he got him there. So LeBron is like the most ultimate, most valuable player to me because, listen, you've seen what the Lakers do even, you know, when he's been there and got hurt. The Lakers don't win a lot when he gets hurt. No. I mean, if you, this is the thing we need to do. You need to come up with a statistic, and I'm sure it's out there, and show the career of LeBron's teams when he's hurt and doesn't play, or the record of the team the year after he leaves and the record of the team the year he gets there. And I don't think there's anybody better than what LeBron has done. Now, he's had more opportunities to do it because he's jumped around. Michael Jordan didn't jump around in his prime, or it'd probably be the exact same thing. So it might be an unfair comparison, but I can only go with the facts that I have presented to me. And Patrick Mahomes missed two games, and the Chiefs still won a game with Matt Moore at quarterback. All right? Patrick Mahomes missed the whole second half of a playoff game, and the Chiefs still, they had a lead when he left, but they still found a way to make the plays with a guy that's 37, 38 years old in Chad Henne. So Andy Reid's pretty valuable, right?
Absolutely.
Tyreek Hill was pretty valuable on that fourth and one play where Henne threw it to him instead of just running the ball. So Mahomes is very, very valuable. But the Chiefs, before Mahomes became quarterback of this team, the Chiefs were winning the AFC West, and they were going to the playoffs, and one time actually won a playoff game. They at least would get to the divisional round for the most part, all right, or wild card. So how valuable is Mahomes? Well, he's super valuable because he gets you over the top to win championships. We understand that. But during the regular season, he's got crazy numbers and everything. But the Chiefs went 12-4 with Alex Smith. Yeah. See my point? Like, last year the Chiefs went 12-5.
So you're kind of saying
the year that they lost the Super Bowl, they went 15-2 or 14-2. In the last game, they didn't even play Mahomes or anybody else. So they're in essence 14-1. But that's the exception. But the Chiefs were 12-5 last year. Alex Smith was 11-5, 12-4.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of saying Chad Henne, Travis Kelce, all these guys, Juju Smith, can be the Chicago Bulls that had Scottie Pippen. Right, yeah. Win 10, 11 games, maybe sneak into the playoffs there.
They got to have somebody other than Chad Henne.
They've got a better supporting cast. Yeah. They've got a better set
Mahomes
of weapons.
If Mahomes wasn't there, Chad Henne wouldn't be the starter.
Well,
you would be finding somebody else if you didn't have Mahomes before the season. Now, going into the season, and if it's already started, then yeah, Chad Henne's your starter because he's your backup. You're probably not going to find a better quarterback than Chad Henne right now. But Chad Henne would not be the Chief starter if you knew Mahomes wasn't going to be.
Right, exactly. But what we're saying is if Mahomes gets hurt, you know, that's when you see the value of a player.
And
well,
you will see
he got hurt twice in his career, and the Chiefs went 1-1 and almost went 2-0.
Yeah.
Okay? They almost beat Aaron Rodgers of Packers with Matt Moore, who came off the street to start. They beat the Vikings, who was very good that year at that point in time, won on a last-second field goal. And they won in the second half without Mahomes in the playoffs. Now, I'm not saying Mahomes isn't valuable. My point is the Chiefs have been able to handle that in a
short
spell.
Period of time.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, if it's a long injury, then it's definitely going to
I've seen LeBron go out for a short spell and they lose five in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas the Chiefs just have the better support
system. That's why you build around what you have,
that
quarterback with Mahomes.
Right.
Or if it's Aaron Rodgers or whoever it is.
Right.
The Packers simply haven't done that, right? The Chiefs have, right? They've gotten the weapons they built around Mahomes to understand that, he's valuable and we need him to get where we want to go at the end of the year.
Right.
But during the regular season, if he misses a couple games here or there, we're going to be all right.
Right.
And that's shown through even in the middle of the game that it got a little dicey there against the Browns, but they were able to finish it off and like you said, get that fourth and one conversion that really kind of iced it and put it out, and Mahomes was back the next week. So, for a short period of time, if you build the right way, you're going to be able to do it. Now, the Bulls is a whole different story, though, with the team you're talking about there. That wasn't a short period of time. That was a year and a half that Michael Jordan wasn't playing, and they were still winning.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously they needed
Michael,
but they knew they needed Michael Jordan to come back to get back to where they were to get back over the top.
Right. And Scottie Pippen's Hall of Famer, Phil Jackson Hall of Famer, maybe the greatest coach ever lived in basketball.
Tony Kukoc at that
time. Tony Kukoc was pretty good at that time, yeah. So you always have to have talent, clearly. But don't you think, like, you could easily have Mahomes be the one of the top candidates every year, and he could be he could have his B game or B-minus game or for a season. I mean, look at his numbers last year. He had a bad year. 37 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 4,800 yards, and they went 12-5, and that was a bad year in which he was broken at some point.
Yeah.
So that was his bad year. I mean, I was talking about this off season. If that's his bad year, dear Lord, pray for the rest of the league, because if that's his down year, imagine what his great years are. Well, the first year when he was MVP as a starter, that's a great year. He's having a great year this year. But let's get back to the original concept. Patrick Mahomes should always automatically be one of the first names you mentioned for MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Mahomes, you could argue that he should get MVP this year right now, along with Hurts. That's the two, in my opinion. Tua could definitely figure in if the Dolphins keep going good and he stays healthy. Tua's numbers are pretty dang good. I don't think Mahomes gets as much credit in regards to the MVP part because, as you guys said, it's boring. We've seen him set the bar so high. That's no different than LeBron. It's no different than Steph Curry. It's no different than Michael Jordan. We've established that, okay? There's even been years where, you know, Rodgers had good years and he didn't win the MVP. Brady's had really good years, like last year. He didn't win the MVP. It happens. And then you hand it to somebody else who's having a great year, but you know he's probably not quite as good of a player, but he's having a great individual season, so we're going to give it to him. But let me ask the second part of this question. When you think, right now, when you think of the Philadelphia Eagles, you think of Jalen Hurts and probably A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You don't think about their head coach. He's not a household name yet. When you think when you think about the Bulls, you always knew Pippen. You always had Phil Jackson, right? When you think about Tom Brady, you don't you thought about Brady and Belichick, but now you don't think who the head coach is. Do you think Aaron Rodgers? You go, oh yeah, Matt LaFleur? No,
no.
My point is, when you think Mahomes, you think right away Andy Reid. I think personally, what hurts Mahomes, which actually is it helps him a ton because he wouldn't be where he is without Andy Reid.
No,
but it hurts him in regards to winning an MVP because people will say, well, he's got a genius calling plays, the mastermind of offense, Andy Reid, and he's got all those weapons. The thing that will help Mahomes win MVP this year is that Tyreek Hill did leave.
Yeah.
If he had Tyreek Hill right now, put him the same numbers, I don't even think he'd be considered nearly as much as he is now.
No, I do think when it comes down to the end of the season, the smarter people are going to start to talk louder about Patrick Mahomes because it wasn't just throwing it, you know, just chucking it 50 yards down the field to Tyreek Hill and letting him run underneath it. It was, or, you know, that slant pattern with 13 seconds left, or whatever it is. You know, this is a little bit different, and Patrick Mahomes has to be a better quarterback overall to get this done with this group. And he's doing that. And so I think
they're tied for the best record in the AFC.
Yes, and if that continues, if they're around the 1-2 seed, then that will continue, and I think the smarter people will start to get louder about Patrick Mahomes if that continues to happen.
I think I totally agree with you, and I think you're already gaining some momentum, especially after what he did the other night with his legs and his arm, even though they only scored 20 points, and that included overtime. It's not like they set the world on fire offensively, and that's the thing. If they don't go out and have these sexy, crazy games where they score 40, that because that's how he had to do it in 18 because the defense is so bad.
Yep.
The defense actually helped Mahomes win MVP in 18.
Yeah.
Because he had to throw, throw, always behind, always have to score to keep up. So my vote would be 1A Hurts, 1B Mahomes, and I don't think it's anywhere close after that, except I would say Tua would be next in line if he stays healthy.
If they did it right, Tyreek would be there too.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
They just don't do it right.
No, they do not. So there's a look at Mahomes, and man, he's just an unbelievable player, as I said 1,000 times already. I'll say it again, enjoy it while you got him. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Well, the K-State football team has another tough test. They'll be at Baylor at 6 o'clock this Saturday. K-State 6-3 overall, 4-2 in the Big 12. They still have a chance to make the Big 12 title game. They need to win out, which means they would have to knock off Baylor coming up on the road at West Virginia, then beat KU at home. None of those will be easy. Win those three, and then you need Texas to lose one. And then K-State would be in the second-place spot and would play probably TCU, unless TCU would trip. I mean, you know, if TCU trips up against Baylor in Texas, suddenly we've got a conundrum, don't we?
Yeah.
Now it's not as clear-cut, and it's very possible that could happen. So 19th in the latest college football playoff rankings, and they'll try to bounce back against Baylor after that tough loss to Texas last week. And Chris Klieman saying that Malik Knowles and Cade Warner have not practiced yet this week, but he expects them to practice later this week and be ready to go against Baylor. So that's good news. Knowles was not on the field on that last drive. That would have been important to have him on the field, but he was banged up against Texas. And they also doesn't look like they're in any hurry to put Will Howard in because they want to preserve a year of eligibility, which, you know, Adrian Martinez played well enough that he don't need to be benched. That's just my opinion. I mean, I don't see why he would be benched. I mean, yes, he made a bad pass and he was stripped, sacked, and fumbled, whatever. But he, not like he was horrendous. He actually allowed them to come back and made some great. He played a lot better in the second half.
Yeah, for sure. Cade Warner did have a boot on after the game on Saturday when he came into the interview room. They asked him about it. He's like, it's just something that's kind of been nagging on me for a few weeks. He's like, nothing huge. So I'm guessing he's just protecting it.
Sounds like it. And like we said, Klieman said yesterday, he said, you know, we expect him and Knowles to practice later in the week and be ready for Baylor. So that's the plan, unless there's some kind of setback. Men's basketball team, of course, got the win, the big win over Rio Grande Valley out of Texas, 93-59. They'll be at Cal coming up on Friday at 6 o'clock. And then next Thursday, they'll have a doubleheader with the women. The men will play first against Kansas City, used to be UMKC, Kansas City, the Ruse, at 5:30. And then the women, K-State women, will play the number 4 team in the land, Iowa, and Caitlin Carco is going to be in town. Too bad Lee isn't healthy and have a great show down there between all Americans. Mm-hmm. That'll be the late game at 8 o'clock next Thursday for the K-State women. Speaking of the women, they are going to play in the Bruce City Battle in Wisconsin coming up on Friday at 3:30 on Veterans Day. They're playing on the Milwaukee Brewers baseball field. The K-State women play Wisconsin. Both teams start off 1-0. And then the men of Wisconsin play Stanford 3 hours later at 6:30. They had to get rid of the mound, took the mound off the field. They're running the basketball court from dugout to dugout, from what I read, across the infield. Brought in some portable bleachers, but then you can still sit in the lower levels of the stadium. Expecting 15,000-17,000 people to watch basketball. They said retractable roof that opens and closes in 10 minutes at American Family Park, which used to be called Miller Park. And so that stadium is going to host. They say it might be a little chilly inside. Bring a jacket because it is colder up there in Wisconsin, even if they have the roof closed. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how this all works, as they didn't want to mess up a lot of the grass. So that's why they went across the infield, took out the mound. So there is no baseball mound there. It got to be a weird basketball court with a mound. Yeah. Oh, hey, there's a big hump in the middle of the court at half court. That's odd. The depth perception will be interesting for both those teams. It's different. Normally, they play in the Kohl Center due to the Wisconsin Badgers. So K-State women have a unique situation coming up Friday on Veterans Day in the afternoon at 3:30 against Wisconsin. And then the showdown with number 4 Iowa coming next Thursday. And so anyway, exciting way to start the season for your K-State sports fan, because, one, you're pretty optimistic, and it's refreshing to see what the K-State men have done already in just a couple of games, one exhibition and one regular game. The women look to be maybe not as bad as some people think without Aoka Lee. They've got some depth, they got some talent, got some transfers, they got some young talent that's only going to get better. And then, of course, K-State football team, yeah, bummer last week, but still has a chance to make it the Big 12 title game. So there's reasons to be, whether it's optimistic, excited, or at least be involved and engrossed in what's happening as a K-State fan right now for all of us.
Absolutely. The loss to Texas was a downer for a lot of that, and sure. And like you said, they still can get there to the Big 12 championship, but they need help now. And they had, like you always say, they could have controlled their own path there to the Big 12 championship had they not had such a bad start against Texas on Saturday. I think that's probably what stands in there more, is like, it was such a bad start.
Yep.
And you know, one of your best players getting ejected right away, and then you're down 21 at half because of an interception right before half. Those things are still flowing through your mind as a K-State football fan. But on the basketball side of things, you're feeling really, really excited right now. And you know, you don't want to give up on the football season, obviously, because there's still a lot to play for here. And but basketball, I think, is at the forefront now because it's exciting and it's new. And until Friday afternoon when we get ready for K-State to play another football game on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
You'll be back into football mode and ready to go. Friday night, you'll think about basketball at Cal and then get ready for the football game on Saturday against Baylor.
So. No doubt. K-State women's volleyball team, a big win over number 25 Iowa State on Friday. Iowa State had knocked off Texas, who was one of the top couple teams in the country, in five sets recently. So K-State wins at Iowa State. They will host West Virginia coming up tomorrow night. They will host Oklahoma next Wednesday. And right now, the K-State volleyball team is 13-11, 4-7 in conference play. That's a look at K-State athletics today in focus, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Final thing before we let you go, some notes from the NBA. Suspended guard of the Brooklyn Nets, Kyrie Irving, is scheduled to meet with Adam Silver, commissioner. Also, Luka Doncic extends his 30-plus point scoring streak to 9 games in a row. Suns' Cam Johnson, MCL injury, out 1 to 2 months. Jay Crowder right now is holding out, in essence. He wants to be traded. He wants a big contract. Chris Paul left the game as well for the Suns with a heel injury. So, not good news for the Suns all the way around here in the last 24 hours or so. And in regards to the early season surprises, listen, I told people the Cavs are my sleeper pick. Remember that?
Yeah.
I said they're the sleeper pick. Dean Wade's playing quite a bit, former K-Stater from a 1A high school from St. John, and got a contract in the offseason. Donovan Mitchell's been a terrific addition. The Garland kid has been very good. And Jared Allen has blossomed into averaging like 2 points in college to an all-star at center for the Cavs. Kevin Love's a very good role player on this team, great leader. So right now the Bucks are 9-1 and the Cavs are 8-2. So they're a bit of a surprise. And then in the – and by the way, the Nets are 4-7. James Harden's out for a month and a half. Sixers are 5-6. In the West, the biggest surprise, no doubt, is the Utah Jazz. Traded away their best players and maybe are better. 9-3. The Suns and Trailblazers 7-3. The Nuggets, Jamal Murray back. He had a sweet dunk the other night. A reverse dunk on a drive. Reverse. It was sweet. Good to see him back. The disappointments, clearly the Lakers are 2-8. That's too bad. The Warriors are 4-7. Raise your hand if you thought before the season that after 10 games, the Thunder would be better than both the Warriors and Lakers. Raise your hand. Come on, raise it proudly. Because if you said that, you should have bought a lottery ticket to win the multi-billionaire thing or whatever, which one ticket did win it. Did you hear that the store that sold the ticket gets $1 million just for selling it?
Good.
That's how big the jackpot
is. Commission, huh?
Yeah. $1 million in a commission. That's
pretty
sweet.
Should have been drug tested if you said that out loud.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
If you just said the Lakers, I might have kind of come close to believing you, but not
Yeah, not the Warriors, who were going to lose six in a row until Steph Curry came in to save the day. So it is interesting to see teams that you think would be really good, or at least talent-wise. The Sixers are 5-6, struggling. The Nets are a mess. They're 4-7, out of the playoffs if it started today. The Cavs are the second-best team in the NBA right now, or third-best team. Actually, they're second-best team. And the Jazz are the best team in the West. And then the Clippers are only 6-5, and the Lakers are horrible, and the Warriors are off to a really rough start. So a lot of surprises early in an NBA season. Having said all that, do you think the Warriors are going to be outside the playoffs when we come to playoff time?
No.
The Thunder will not be better than the Warriors at the end of the year.
I would agree with you.
They may be better than the Lakers, though.
I don't know if the Cavs could hold on and be a 2 seed or not. I mean, the Celtics are good. The Hawks are off to a good start. And the Bucks finally lost a game. Who did the Bucks lose to? I wasn't paying attention. They lost to the Hawks. They finally lost.
Yeah, that's who I remember.
They were 9-0.
They were down by like 15 the other night.
Dadgummit, I thought somebody was going to go 82-0. I had a whole bunch of money riding on the Bucks to get that done. Best record in NBA ever, 73-9. Best team ever, the team went 72-10.
Right.
The Bulls, because they won it all.
Correct.
And the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead against the Cavs when they were 73-9, and thus were robbed of history. It is what it is. You can't say you have the greatest season ever if you don't end up holding up the trophy. Would you agree?
Every time.
That's why the Patriots aren't thought of as highly going 18-1. They're 18-0 because they didn't win the final one.
Right.
And that's kind of how it's supposed to be, unfortunately, for some. All right. Have a great day, everyone.
state, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.